The smooth, gleaming red tower of police headquarters stayed smooth and gleaming due to constant maintenance. The funds for such dedicated care apparently didn't trickle down to the actual precincts where cops did the real work of law enforcement. The Mattered 17th Precinct was made of the same blue crystal composition as most of the city's other buildings. The walls weren't groomed very often, to say the least. They looked more like frozen water than actual walls, all wavy and warped and dotted with lumps and bumps. A few spots showed blurry cracks, the result of bullet holes since filled in by the natural expanding crystal.
This appears to be a dangerous part of the city.
Yolanda nodded.
That's what I hear. It straddles the line between the high-rent downtown area and one of the slums, so cops here can handle cases for the rich and famous and the dirt poor in the same day.
They sat in a cab across the street from the 17th Precinct. Seven lanes and two layers of traffic whizzed by on their left. Grab cabs, hover cars, wheel trucks, and one sentient vehicles that flowed through the flat blue streets at all hours of the day and night. One lane was reserved for the six-legged yellow crawlers that had to flow everywhere traffic flowed in order to do their constant maintenance work. Some of the machines were anti-grav enabled, but most got by on legs alone. Since time immemorial, there was always an accepted way to deal with cop sources. You were supposed to call to set up the meeting. This was mainly to allow for privacy and to protect source identities, but it also gave the cops a chance to duck out if they didn't want to talk to you. Shift change had already passed. Any moment now, the cops Yolanda needed to talk to would come out for an end to their workday. Minutes later, the well-dressed heavy G Joey Clark walked out the door with an equally well-dressed blue furred Quith leader by his side.
That's not Regat. I wonder who it is. Pay the cabbie, let's go.
Yolanda stepped out as Y-Corp tapped the hollow icon floating above the driver's seat. Joey Clark wore a tweed jacket that fit his long arms. His hands hung well past the knees of his short legs, fingertips almost brushing against the ground. The leader wore clothes that would be considered professional for a leader, not fancy or fine, but neat and clean, the leader equivalent of a human sport coat. Yolanda waited for a lull in traffic, then jogged through seven lanes, Y-Corp right behind her. Hover cars hummed above them as they crossed and reached the far sidewalk. Yolanda kept jogging, coming up behind Clark and his friend.
Evening, Joey. Difficult day protecting the city from ne'er-do-wells?
The big cop turned and smiled broadly.
Miss Davenport, always a pleasure.
The leader turned as well. His softball-sized eyes swirled with black and the deep green of betrayal. Unlike workers and warriors, leaders could hide their emotions almost at will. The black was on his cornea because he wanted Yolanda to know he was angry.
Talking to a reporter is a pleasure? It's a pleasure to speak to the press and have our careers on the line as she prints whatever she likes? It's a pleasure to be misquoted and lied to?
Yolanda smiled.
Wow, Joey, who is Mr. Funbags here? He must be a ball at parties.
Joey winced and looked away.
Yolanda, this is my new partner, Parmot the Insane.
Parmot's right pedipalp pulled his coat a bit to the side so Yolanda could see the badge gleaming from the holster of the pistol strapped in the middle of his narrow chest. Of the two items, Yolanda had a hunch Parmot really wanted her to see the gun more.
That's Detective Parmot.
The leader did not look amused. Yolanda sensed Y-Corp shifting nervously beside her. Parmot glanced at Joey and then back at Yolanda.
Clark, are you going to talk to her?
Joey shrugged.
Probably. Yolanda and I go way back.
Oh, I understand. You humans make extra time to accommodate each other. Is that it?
Joey's big jaw twitched.
I'm not human, Parmot. I'm Heavy G.
Parmot's eyes swirled with dark green, the color of embarrassment. And this time, it was a natural reaction, not a calculated showing of emotion.
Yes, Joey. You have told me this before. I apologize.
Joey shook his head.
Don't worry about it. Come on, Yolanda. Let's go.
Joey continued on the sidewalk. Yolanda and Y-Corp followed.
Clark, it's a simple mistake. You should not speak to the media without your partner present.
Joey raised his hand and waved without turning around.
See you tomorrow, partner.
Yolanda fell in on Joey's left.
You know how it is, Joey. We all look alike.
There is no we, Yolanda. Don't let your efforts at humor make you just as racist as he is.
Yolanda nodded. Heavy G could see racism anywhere.
Yeah, Joey, you're right. I'll put my stand-up on hold while we get some coffee, okay?
Coffee? Lady, I'm off duty. I need a beer.
Sure, what's close?
A new place I like. It's just opened up by the death's leading receiver, Brasilia. It's kind of low-key, just what we need.
Sounds good to me, big guy.
Joey nodded, then looked down at Wycor, who scurried along on Joey's right.
Wow, Yolanda, you merit a private worker now? Moving up in the world, I see.
He's not mine. Wycor the Aware here is my assistant for the piece I'm working on, but he's his own sentient.
His own sentient? Yeah, like that's possible.
Yolanda glanced at Wycor in time to see a touch of black swirl across his cornea. Too much irony to deal with in one moment. Joey being racist while still smarting from a racist comment, and Wycor being indignant about being owned when he slavishly followed the commands of Robert Froese. Joey moved to the left to the edge of the sidewalk. The traffic of Mattert whizzed by on their left. Blue skyscrapers passed by on their right. Joey, walking nearest to the road, was kind of polite respect. If any of the crazy drivers careened off the street and onto the sidewalk, they'd hit him before they'd hit her. Joey rubbed the back of his head and grimaced.
Working with Parmit is a pain, let me tell you. No sense of humor. I swear he nearly went for his gun earlier today when I made a joke that he had a crush on that tow pirate Suidad Juarez.
Yolanda winced. The kid should know that leaders didn't respond well to teasing. Accusing a Quith of wanting to be with another species was highly offensive. Joey walked into a bar, aptly named Brasilia's. It wasn't surprising that she had enough money to open a business. Since Jude Tweedy had left and Condor Adrienne had taken over as quarterback, the death had changed from a running team to a passing one. Brasilia had gone from a decent, underutilized Tier 2 receiver to one of the leading receivers in Tier 1. She had yardage incentives in her contract, so she was cleaning up in the credit department. Yolanda looked around. It was a nice enough place, but she'd wished that Joey had told her the staff was all male Sklornos. The little puffballs scurried around the floor and back and forth across the bar top, full drinks and empty glasses in their strong little tentacles. Male Sklorno gave Yolanda the creeps, but Joey had picked the place, and she wasn't about to deny him in any way, not when she needed more information. They grabbed a table, and Yolanda waved over a waiter.
Yes, ma'am.
How about a round of beers?
Yes, right away.
And a sandwich. Anything with protein. And two orders of fries. And a banana cream pie.
Joey looked at Yolanda.
You don't mind if I have a pre-dinner snack, do you?
Good to see you, Joey.
You too.
So, new partner, huh? Where's Rigat these days?
Dead.
Yolanda leaned back.
Oh, I'm sorry. I didn't hear about that in the news.
Joey shrugged.
That's because it wasn't in the line of duty. He wanted to retire. He said he'd done all he could and wanted to have kids, so he took that gibble juice crap to turn female.
Wycor suddenly slapped the table.
It is gibble juice once, and it is not crap. It is a key hormone in my species' reproductive cycle.
Joey rolled his eyes.
Yeah, sure, whatever.
Wycor's eyes swirled with black. He leaned away from the table and crossed his pedipalp arms under his chin. A very human gesture of annoyance.
Anyway, he took that stuff to try and turn female. He got a bad batch or whatever, and he died. No one cares about a cop's death unless he goes out in a blaze of bullets.
Yolanda nodded.
I'm still sorry to hear it. He was a good cop.
Joey nodded. He was clearly still dealing with the loss. Yolanda could imagine why. To go from a seasoned, level-headed partner like Rigat to what seemed to be a hot-headed, racially insensitive sentient like Parmot had to be a challenge. The waiter crawled onto the table with the food and drinks. Yolanda stopped herself from making a disgusted face when the waiter placed the mag cans and Joey's dishes, then slithered his furry little body back to the floor. Yolanda popped hers open and felt the can immediately frost up. Joey did the same, but Wycor left his on the table.
Wycor, you don't drink?
Not while I'm performing a task of employment.
That's okay. I'm sure Joey's got your back.
The young detective grinned. Joey drained his beer in one chug and popped open Wycor's.
So, Yolanda, what's this piece you're working on?
As Joey started eating, Yolanda dropped the polite manner and leaned in.
Here's the deal, Joey. I'm not going to quote you. I'm not going to tell anyone we talked. But I need to know some things about the Grace McDermott murder.
Joey looked nervous.
Ah, so you're why we at the department got a message from the chief not to discuss the case.
Joey looked around the bar, probably checking to see if anyone was watching them.
Things were left off of Rigat's report.
Joey shrugged.
He told you what he could, Yolanda. I gave my input, but he ran the show. If he kept info off the official report, there was a reason for it.
McDermott's body. What condition was it in?
The dead condition. She was a real mess. It was only my second homicide, but I'm not going to forget it. Not ever.
I'd love to see the autopsy report.
Joey smiled and waggled a finger.
Oh, no you don't. You'd only say that if you couldn't get your hands on it. That means if I get it for you, my job is at risk. Sorry, but no.
Yolanda fought down a wave of frustration. 0-2 in the autopsy department. Time to try a different angle.
Did Anna have any trouble identifying the body? I mean, as bad as it was and all.
Joey shook his head.
No, she identified McDermott right away.
Yolanda's stomach churned with the excitement of that little victory. She just confirmed Villani had been at the crime scene, consistent with Miriam's story.
Did it strike you odd that Villani was there?
Joey shrugged.
She lives in the building. She owns the building, so it's not surprising or suspicious she was there. Not to mention the fact that she was romantically involved with the deceased.
Who discovered the body, Joey?
Joey looked at Yolanda, looked hard.
Why do I get the impression you already know the answer to that question?
Yolanda looked away, wondering if she had just put Miriam in danger.
It's a basic question. I know the neighbors saw Jew fleeing the scene, so which one of them discovered the body?
Joey drained his beer and signaled for a third.
Look, I don't know what angle you're pursuing, but it's an open and shut case. Jew Tweedy had motive. He was dating her, and she was still seeing Villani. So motive is a crime of passion. He had opportunity because he was basically living there when the murder occurred. He had the door codes and came and went as he pleased. He had means, and she was beaten to death.
But beaten how badly? Jew's strong, but was he strong enough for that?
Joey stared at Yolanda again.
I saw the body. You didn't. Sure, he was strong enough. Have you ever seen Jew Tweedy in person? He's huge. He's a human, sure, but he's almost as big as I am. If he got mad at you, you couldn't outrun him and you couldn't outfight him. You'd just be dead.
Yolanda felt that excitement in her belly growing because someone was lying. Either Miriam or Joey Clark. That put Miriam firmly back on the list of those who could have killed Grace McDermott, along with Jew Tweedy or some thug hired by Anna Villani. Or Joey was lying about the condition of the body to obey his chief and quietly throw Yolanda off the trail. Wycor touched Yolanda's knee under the table, and she nearly jumped. Yolanda looked in the direction Wycor's eye was pointing and saw Parmot entering the bar, scanning for them. The blue-furred leader saw them and started over.
Great. My partner, the psychopath, is back.
As Parmot reached the table, Yolanda reached over and pushed out a chair for him.
Detective, you decided to join us after all.
Parmot sat. Wycor seemed to shrink into himself. Joey just looked annoyed and maybe a bit afraid.
I've been a detective much longer than Detective Clark here. I know how to deal with reporters. I have dealt with many.
Okay, I can take a hint.
Yolanda had to grab at whatever she could, because now the dynamic between Parmot and Joey told her that Parmot would do whatever he could to keep Joey from any further meetings.
I just had one more question, Joey. Did the coroner say death came from the crushed skull or from the twisted spine?
Well, I...
Parmot rapped smartly on the table.
This is over. We have nothing more for you, Miss Davenport. If you missed details in the first article about Jew Tweedy and Grace McDermott, that is not the department's concern. What do you hope to gain by asking the same questions a second time?
A detective is asking me why I would repeat a question? You cops invented the technique. What are you afraid of, Parmot?
Parmot's cornea instantly swirled with a wash of colors. The black of rage combined with the dark red of surprise.
Miss Davenport, do not contact my partner again. Clark, let's go.
Joey rose from his chair, and without another word, the two cops left. It was an odd sight. The 6'5", wide-shouldered, long-armed Clark walking next to the 3'6", blue-furred Quith leader. Yet it was clear which one of them was in charge. Yolanda drummed her fingers on the tabletop.
Damn it, Wycor. I thought we were close until Funbag the Hilarious showed up. I wonder why they call him the Insane, though.
Wycor lifted a pedipalp, activating his palm-up display.
I can look up his service record if you like, Ms. Davenport.
You can access restricted police files?
Bob has given me limited access. When police are assigned to protect specific players or league personnel, we prefer to do our own background checks.
So can you access the autopsy report?
Wycor paused. He looked up from his palm-up display to stare at Yolanda.
Ms. Davenport, I do not mean to sound offensive, but if I could call up the autopsy report, is it not common sense that I would have done so already?
Sorry I asked.
His sparse fur ruffled once, then again fell flat against his carapace. Wycor turned his attention back to the icons.
Ah, here we are. Parmont the Insane. Oh, perhaps, Ms. Davenport, you should have been nicer to him.
Nicer to that little dictator? Why would I be nice to him?
Wycor held his palm further out and turned the floating display so Yolanda could read it.
Check the bottom section.
Justified uses of lethal force in the line of duty, 22. Incidents that resulted in death of a suspect, 17. He killed 17 sentients in the line of duty. You're right, Wycor. I guess I should have been nicer to him. I think we should take an official work break, and right now.
Why is that, Ms. Davenport?
Because I need to drink, and I don't want to drink alone.
Yolanda Davenport stumbled out of Brasilia's, assisted by Wycor the Aware, who was only stumbling a bit less than she was.
As I was saying, Ms. Davenport, I feel that the 72 Hullwalkers were the best team ever.
Oh, please. The 75 Jacks would have beat them like a purest nation concubine.
They stumbled across the busy sidewalk to the curb and started waving for a cab. The artificial suns had faded out for the day, leaving the crystal-encrusted city dome high above hidden in darkness. The city itself, however, was very much alive. Lights lit up the buildings from the insides, making the translucent crystal walls glow a steady, soft blue. Nightclubs and bars were lit up with different colored lights, making for an eye-pleasing array of purples and green blues. Some of that illumination reached up to the ceiling and reflected off the massive curled crystals to create a constant twinkle, similar to the night sky of surface cities. It was like being a tiny speck of magnesium dust inside of a sprawling geode. Yet even at this hour in the city of crystal light, the crawlers kept on crawling, kept on scraping and cutting. Madarch wasn't the city that never slept. It was the city that never stopped trimming.
Those Jacks won 2 Galaxy Bowls. I will grant you that Don Pine in his prime is possibly the best quarterback ever, but the Hullwalkers won 3 Galaxy Bowls in a row. A feat of this magnitude has never been equaled.
Oh, what do you know about football? You work for the commissioner or something?
Wycor's pedipalp started shaking with laughter.
I see what you did there, Ms. Davenport. It is funny because you imply that if I knew a great deal about football, I might work for the commissioner, when in fact I do work for him. You are making an intentionally ironic obfuscation.
Wycor's pedipalp shook uncontrollably. Yolanda was glad he liked the joke, but explaining it like that seemed to take the fun out of it. He began laughing so hard that she had to help him to remain standing. Movement farther down the sidewalk caught Yolanda's eye, a Quith warrior wearing gray pants, the red chitin of his upper body exposed to the evening light.
Wycor? Stop laughing.
Ah, I see. Telling me to stop makes me think about it, and if I cannot then stop because I am thinking about it, the humor continues
It's Merrick!
Wycor's pedipalps went still.
Merrick?
Yolanda pointed as Wycor scanned down the street. Merrick was closing the distance and was only a few hundred feet away, pushing his way through the nighttime crowd.
Great, right after the police leave us.
Ms. Davenport, we have been in that bar for 3 hours.
Whatever.
Yolanda slung her satchel across her neck and shoulder so it wouldn't be lost.
Let's get out of here.
A wise choice.
They turned and started walking quickly in the opposite direction, still trying to flag a cab. Yolanda suddenly wished she hadn't had so many beers and that Wycor had gone a little easier on those beef-eater cocktails. Wycor suddenly stopped walking.
Wycor, come on! We're in trouble!
From the front as well as the rear.
Wycor pointed a pedipalp down the sidewalk. Yolanda looked and saw the danger. The key who had tried to follow them that morning when they were headed to Miriam's. The key was pushing people out of the way and coming straight for them.
This is bad.
You humans have a propensity for stating the perfectly obvious. Can we go back into the bar or enter another establishment?
Yolanda looked right to the traffic whizzing by. Daytime traffic had been bad, but nothing like this. It was like they were against the glass at a hover car race. A strong hand grabbed Yolanda's arm.
Be quiet. If you scream, I will hurt you.
Yolanda's head was still spinning. She didn't know what to do. The key scurried up. Yolanda went from being held by a Quith warrior to being held by the key's 2 left arms. The 12-foot-long creature's 2 right arms held Wycor firmly. Merrick stood at the curb and waved his pedipalp arms over his head. From the far lane, a 6-legged crawler turned out of its dedicated lane and crossed traffic, making wheel trucks and hover cars brake to avoid a collision. In seconds, the crawler had stepped up onto the sidewalk. The pedestrian seemed annoyed, but not afraid. Crawlers walking on sidewalks seemed to be a common thing. Yolanda hadn't seen one of the crawlers this close before. Scratched yellow paint decorated with various warning decals, also scratched, covered the dented body and legs. Three light but strong legs on each side, a gripping extendable arm under the long head. On top of that head, some 10 feet off the ground, was the narrow cockpit, the canopy of which ran the length of the head. The canopy opened, rising up on a rear hinge. A Quith worker in a yellow jumpsuit stood up.
Hurry up! Get them in here!
The driver pointed behind his seat to an area Yolanda couldn't see. Yolanda was lifted, her satchel starting to come loose. So she grabbed it as she fell into a dirty, greasy, narrow compartment littered with metal boxes and tools mounted on the interior wall. Yolanda started to sit up, but Wycor landed on top of her, knocking her back down again. The canopy hissed down on top of them, its metal frame and crystal panes sealing with the crawler's edge. Yolanda pushed against the glass, but it wouldn't move. She leaned forward, pushing past Wycor. The outer and top edges of the driver's seat ran right up to the canopy. They were trapped in the maintenance vehicle's trunk. Yolanda banged on the metal back of the driver's seat.
Hey! Let us out of here!
Hold on. This is a bumpy ride.
The crawler lurched forward. Yolanda and Wycor were thrown back against the rear of the compartment. Each step of the six-legged machine was a jarring thump. Maybe the driver's seat had inertial compensators, but there were none in the back. They had to get out of there. Yolanda looked at the tools lining the compartment's walls. Drills, hammers, crystal picks. Everything a city-dwelling girl could need. Yolanda grabbed one of the hammers and tried to pull it free. It wouldn't budge. She pulled harder until her muscles screamed and her ligaments threatened to give way. And still, it wouldn't come free from the compartment's inside wall.
Don't bother. Magnetically secure.
Yolanda let go. It made sense. The crawlers moved up and down, hung beneath the crystal that arced between buildings. Anything hanging loose would clatter around endlessly.
Wycor, where are they taking us?
I am not privy to such knowledge, Miss Davenport.
Wycor tried to brace himself against the crawler's constant thumping.
Hold on tight, we're heading up.
What?
The world tipped over and Yolanda fell back hard against the compartment's rear wall. She tumbled and hit her head on a toolbox, sending a searing pain through her scalp. She wound up on her head and shoulders, Wycor's weight pressing down on her chest.
Apologies.
Wycor climbed off of her. There was barely enough room for them to sit side by side. The crawler lurched higher. The back wall had become the floor, and the roof a window out into the city. All of the views that she'd had thus far were of nothing compared to this one. She could see all of Madard's curving up and out, to the left and right, fading into darkness straight ahead. A sea of glowing blue spires beneath.
I think we're climbing the dome wall.
Wycor's eyes swirled with a pink of fear.
I think that you are correct.
Higher and higher they went. At first they were level with the skyscrapers that paralleled the dome wall. Then they were even with the tops of those buildings. Then those tops faded off below.
How high do you think we are?
1,000 meters at least. Miss Davenport, do you think they are going to murder us?
That's the million credit question. I don't know.
Fear pinched and twisted Yolanda's stomach.
I hope not.
I don't think they're gonna kill you. I was asked to bring you to an associate of Greedock the Splithead. If they wanted to kill you, we've already passed many places where your body would never be found.
Wow, you're so comforting.
Wycor stood up so his head was closer to the driver's seat back, which was now the roof.
My name is Wycor the Aware, and my Shamakath is Robert Froese, commissioner of the GFL, one of the most powerful sentients in the galaxy. Did you know that?
No, I did not know that.
Wycor's six antennae stood on end.
You think the commissioner will let you get away with this? This is a direct attack on one of his servants, which is a direct attack on him.
Yolanda sat back and watched, fascinated. She'd never seen two workers talk to each other. In a caste that was subservient to all, it stood to reason that the only time a worker could possibly be an equal was with another worker.
You'll be fine. They assured me no violence. There is no need to tell your Shamakath about this.
Wycor reached up to bang on the back of the driver's seat.
Froese will split you in half for this.
Well then, I change my mind. I hope they do kill you.
Before Wycor could answer, the crawler suddenly tipped. The floor once again became the floor. The canopy once again became the roof. Yolanda landed hard on her back, the corner of a toolbox digging painfully into her right side. They were in a small cavern. The crawler walked toward some kind of rigging or platform. On either side, Yolanda saw similar platforms with partially disassembled crawlers next to them. Streams of parts lay on sheets on the ground. Large tools like hydraulic lifts, metal presses, and a dozen other things Yolanda didn't recognize were either next to the crawlers or pushed back against the blue crystal walls.
This is a repair area for the maintenance machines.
The crawler drew closer to the empty maintenance platform. On it stood a Quith warrior. This one was a pale yellow color and wore the traditional gray pants. His cracked and scarred chitin was covered with enamels and engravings.
That one looks dangerous.
And you say humans state the obvious?
The crawler pulled up next to the platform and stopped, the canopy open. Strong warrior middle arms reached in and grabbed her before she could scramble away. The warrior pulled Yolanda onto the platform. He didn't hurt her, but she could feel by his grip that it was useless to try and escape. He had to outweigh her by 200 pounds or more. Wycor started to climb out.
Stay! You stay right there!
The driver stood in his seat.
Can he stay on the platform? I would like to leave.
The warrior looked at the driver.
I said stay. How else are they going to get down if you leave?
The driver looked nervously at Wycor, then back at the warrior, then sat.
Come.
The warrior led Yolanda down the platform steps. The platform's top was 10 feet off the cavern's flat blue surface. The warrior then guided her to a big tunnel at the back of the cavern. Yolanda looked back and up to see Wycor in the rear of the cockpit, but a tug in her arm made her face forward. A long tunnel was carved right into the mountain, or crust, or whatever made up the dome ceiling. Its blue walls scraped all over like scratched glass and streaked with bits of yellow paint. The floor also had scratches and gouges, probably from crawler feet. Where the floor wasn't scratched, it was a deep translucent blue, lined with sharp white crack lines that ran down until they were nothing but a fuzzy blur. Yolanda felt like she was standing on 100 feet of ice. The tunnel opened up into a big square room. The walls were wavy and irregular, like those of Precinct 17. A mostly disassembled crawler took up most of the back wall, but there was also furniture here, made to the dimensions of Quith workers, a tattered couch, a table and chairs, and a desk. Behind that desk sat a Quith leader. He wore expensive clothes and jewelry, although the jewelry looked like a cheap knockoff stuff and not the real thing. Big patches were missing from his reddish-black fur, showing red carapace beneath. He resembled a dog Yolanda had once seen that was losing its fur due to mange. The leader's left pedipalp was twisted and bent. It looked like a birth defect, but considering how the Quith treated any physical deformity, the damage probably came in the leader's infancy. Another mark had clearly come later in life. A thick pink scar cut diagonally across his upper eyelid.
Miss Davenport, I am Turon the Ugly.
You can say that again.
The leader stood up and leaned on the desk.
You're being funny?
No, Turon, I'm just a little out of sorts from being kidnapped.
Turon waved his good pedipalp hand in a gesture indicative of a leader's derision of all sentience other than his fellow leaders.
You are unharmed.
So far. What do you want?
I'm an associate of Greedock the Splithead. We have information that you are investigating Grace McDermott's death. We want to know what you've found so far.
Oh, really? You've kidnapped me and brought me here to request information? Who the hell does he think he is?
He thinks he is Greedock the Splithead.
Yolanda felt her grasp on her composure slipping.
I don't know what Greedock wants from me. He gave me information on Barnes and the pirates. Then when I run with it, he calls me a liar to everyone who will listen or broadcast his words. Smear my name? I don't think so, Mr. Ugly. I do not think so.
Turon looked at the warrior standing behind Yolanda, then back at Yolanda again.
This part of your interaction with Greedock is not my concern. You were sent here to find out information on Grace McDermott's murder. Greedock wants to know what you have found.
Yolanda leaned back a little. She felt a small trembling beneath her feet. Once there, then gone.
I'm recording everything. I have live uploads going on now. You can't do this.
Not up here. OS-1's crust is too thick, and you're far away from the signal repeaters down in the city. You have no uplink here.
Turon opened a desk drawer and pulled out a thick device. A long barrel and a thick handle. It didn't look quite like a gun, at least not one that Yolanda had ever seen before.
They repair crawlers here. The machines break down so often. Frequently, there are cracks in the hulls. Do you know how you repair cracks in metal?
Turan lifted the device so that the barrel pointed toward the ceiling. He pulled the trigger. There was a heavy click sound, then an inch-long cone of white-hot flame came out of the end. The flame stayed there.
They weld them.
Turan's softball-sized eye flooded solid orange, the color of pure happiness.
I asked you what you found out. Now you will tell me.
Yolanda started to run, but Big Warrior Petipelp hands grabbed her shoulders and thick middle hands held her hips tight. She felt that trembling again, stronger this time, but she couldn't look away from the flame.
You don't need that. I'll tell you everything.
Yes, I know you will.
Turan walked out from behind the desk, the flame still hissing from the welder. He walked closer. Yolanda pulled harder, as hard as she could, but it was no use. The floor trembling increased. Turan stood in front of her. He only came up to her sternum, but the orange in his eye said that he was going to enjoy hurting her. He stared at Yolanda, that eye a swirling wash of light orange shades. Then he looked to her left, and his eye shifted instantly to pink.
What the?
Yolanda wasn't going to miss her chance at the distracted leader.
Ow!
Yolanda raised her left foot and kicked out hard, knocking Turan back into the desk. The torch skittered along the scratched blue floor. Suddenly, all four hands holding her let go. Yolanda turned to see a miracle. The yellow crawler exiting the tunnel and rising up on thin legs. Behind the cockpit canopy, Wycor the Aware. The yellow-shelled warrior rushed toward the crawler. He leapt, reaching for the canopy. But the crawler's grabbing arm whipped up fast and slammed into the warrior, knocking him straight back at Yolanda. She dove to the ground as he sailed overhead to smash into Turan, crushing the leader between a warrior body and the desk.
Miss Davenport, come on!
Wycor was standing in the driver's seat, the hinged canopy open behind him. Yolanda scrambled to her feet and ran at the crawler. She had no idea how she could jump that 10 feet, but the grabbing arm bent and recoiled. The claw was just there, 3 feet off the ground, and twisted to the side, flat and waiting for her. Yolanda jumped on it and held tight as the claw reached back to the cockpit. Yolanda jumped into the trunk area.
Get us out of here!
The crawler turned in place as the canopy lowered. Wycor drove the machine at the tunnel. Yolanda saw the tunnel's edge coming up fast.
Lower! Get low!
The crawler canopy smashed into the edge of the tunnel roof. Safety Christine cracked and dropped on her, like a heavy, floppy blanket. Wycor forced the lurching crawler deeper into the tunnel. The canopy's metal frame scraped the blue crystal ceiling, showering Yolanda with shards and sparks.
Wycor, what are you doing?
It was easier on the way in. I wasn't going as fast. Should I slow down? I might damage this machine.
No! Just go! What happened to the driver?
The plumber slammed into walls and the canopy cage again, ground into the ceiling, bending metal. Yolanda covered her face as crystal shards dropped all around her.
I had to show him the city. The shortest distance between two points is a straight line.
Yolanda wouldn't have thought Wycor capable of tossing a sentient off a cliff. But if he hadn't, her skin would be bubbling from a welding torch. The crawler exited the tunnel. Free of the low ceiling, the body rose up and moved faster. Platforms and broken down crawlers shot by. Yolanda scanned left and right, hoping she wouldn't see a crawler in one piece. She didn't. Turan and the warrior wouldn't be able to chase them. She grabbed the back of the driver's seat. Yolanda stood, head poking through the dented canopy frame, and leaned forward to put her head next to Wycor's.
Get us down, and we're safe. Don't slow down! Just don't let us fall.
The crawling part is mostly automatic. We will be fine. Make sure you're holding on tight!
Yolanda felt the canopy cage rattle in her hands. A rattle that wasn't timed with one of the crawler's quick steps. She turned, knowing what she would see, and felt her stomach drop to her knees when she saw it. The yellow-shelled warrior on top of the crawler, clinging to the back of the smashed and bent canopy frame. His eye was a solid sheen of black. His middle arm pincers held tight to the frame. White pedipalp pincers, streaked with blood, reached out for her. Yolanda drew a breath to scream, but didn't have the chance before the world fell away behind her as the crawler suddenly tipped down. Yolanda's back slammed into the back of the driver's seat. The warrior had been riding on top of the canopy cage. His weight rocked him forward as gravity suddenly pulled him straight down. He slid across the canopy cage above her, heading down, but reached back and grabbed the last bent canopy bar. His arm snapped tight, and his 300 pounds yanked the crawler to the left. The crawler feet dug in, and broken crystal cascaded down the vertical cavern wall. The crawler started to skid, rear legs extending back and dragging like anchors. The machine slid down and turned to the right as it slammed into larger crystals, breaking them off at the base or shattering them explosively into shards of flying blue. Yolanda felt gravity shifting on her again. The seatback that had been the floor suddenly became the left wall, and the open canopy became a floor she fell through. A canopy bar slammed into her stomach, knocking the air out of her lungs. Yolanda rolled off, stunned, and her body dropped through. She felt weightless, saw a wall of blue before her, and the city lights impossibly far below. Her left hand shot up on its own, and her fingers wrapped around the canopy bar. Then her full weight snapped down. Something gave in her shoulder, and the joint lit with fire. The crawler continued to skid, clawed legs reaching out, breaking more crystal than they grabbed. Yolanda's feet dangled in the darkness.
Miss Davenport, help!
Yolanda swung her right hand up to grab the canopy frame. She pulled and strained, dragging herself up into the trunk. Her foot kicked up, found purchase, and she hauled herself through the bent metal bars. The crawler slipped again, sliding several stomach-lurching feet before the right side leg hooks dug in, slamming them all to a sudden stop. Yolanda put her feet on the inside of the bars. What had been the left side of the crawler was now the bottom. Yolanda stood, her head peeking out of what had been the right side of the canopy, which was now the top. The warrior lay belly down on the right side of the crawler's head, his pedipalp arms reaching through the ruined canopy. One hand yanked on Y-Kor's antennae, trying to pull him out of the seatbelt that held him tight. The other hand grabbing at the crawler's joystick controls. Warrior's eyes swirled with black and dark red. Y-Kor's eye was a solid glowing pink. Yolanda ducked back through the canopy bars. Her eyes flashed across the tools attached to the trunk's lower inside walls. Then she spotted what looked like some sort of crystal pick. Yolanda grabbed it and pulled hard before she remembered the tools wouldn't budge.
Y-Kor! The magnets! Release the tool hold!
Y-Kor's pedipalp hands slapped at the controls in front of him. She kept pulling at the pick, but it wouldn't give.
Y-Kor, turn it off!
The pick came free so fast, she almost fell back. All the tools in the crawler's right side came free with a clatter, bouncing off the canopy bars as they tumbled out into the darkness below. Yolanda stood, sticking her head and upper body out of the crawler's right side. The warrior was only 2 feet away, but he was focused solely on Y-Kor. The warrior's chitin flexed as his muscles squeezed and pulled. Yolanda had to act, or Y-Kor would die. Yolanda leaned toward the warrior and thrust out with the metal pick. The warrior saw her at the last second and turned to look at the threat, but it was too late. The pick slid into his baseball-sized eye just before the armored eyelid slid down. Yolanda winced as a splash of fluid sprayed into her face. The warrior's pedipalp hands released Y-Kor and grabbed at the pick. He yanked it free and tossed it away into the darkness, then pressed his hands against his closed, oozing eye.
Y-Kor, point it down!
Miss Davenport!
The warrior started swinging wildly. Yolanda ducked back through the canopy bars as a yellow arm swept by just above her head.
Y-Kor, take us down!
The crawler lurched as Y-Kor turned the controls. Yolanda saw the warrior pause. He still couldn't see, but he knew he was in trouble. Then the crawler turned to the left, which pointed the nose straight down the cavern wall. The warrior slid forward. All four hands swung out, grabbing at anything. But he was too late. His body slid off the crawler's nose, dropped toward the glowing city over 1,000 feet below. Yolanda lay back against the rear of the driver's seat. The back of the trunk was now the roof. Her shoulders screamed, her legs trembled, and every bit of her seemed to shake.
Y-Kor, are you okay?
I am not. I need some assistance, but the regulator is not yet back.
Yolanda clutched at her shoulder. It burned. Her skin felt cool, sweat evaporating into the night air.
So what's wrong with the regular hospital?
Redux likely has contacts at hospitals. As soon as you are scanned in, he will know where you are.
Yolanda thought back to the confusing things Turon had said about Greedock wanting a progress report.
I'm not sure those guys worked for the Splithead. I'm thinking they worked for Volani.
That made a lot more sense, but Yolanda wondered why honest people would pretend to be Greedock's people.
Then we definitely must not go to a hospital. Volani will surely have sentience there. She tried to kill you.
Wycor!
Wycor didn't answer. Yolanda flipped onto her belly. She held tight so as not to be thrown from the moving machine, then peeked around the left side of the driver's seat. Wycor hung limply, held in only by his seatbelt. His eye was closed. His six antennae looked bent and swollen. Yolanda grabbed a shoulder and shook.
Wycor, wake up!
Wycor's eyelid fluttered open.
Ms. Davenport, I do not feel well.
The night was slowly giving way to light. Not from above, but from the skyscrapers as the crawler moved back down to city level. The crawler started to angle to the right. Yolanda grabbed the canopy frame and slowly and carefully slid out of the top and into the driver's seat next to Wycor.
Ms. Davenport, there is not enough room.
Shut up!
Yolanda wedged herself next to him as best she could.
Show me how to drive this thing before you pass out.
Wycor did so, weakly but efficiently. The right joystick controlled the front arm, while the left controlled direction. The left foot controlled speed, but as Wycor had said earlier, the actual crawling part seemed to be mostly automatic. They moved past the top level of the highest skyscraper. Blue light from the translucent building played off the blue crystals around them. Yolanda looked right and left. In both directions, she saw the familiar movement of crawlers. The night shift, keeping the city from being overgrown. Wycor fell limp. Yolanda didn't have to be a Xenodoc to know that wasn't a good sign. The crawler's sharp, littered dashboard let out a beep. She read the display. Wireless networking established. She was back in range of the city's signal repeaters.
What do I do?
Yolanda needed help, but didn't know who could provide it. Then it occurred to her. Tarot the Smasher. She dug into her pocket for the message cube. She pressed the sides, then used her thumb to flip through the hollow icons until she found the contact information she was looking for. She scanned the crawler dashboard for the communications interface, found it, then pressed the message cube against it, transferring the number.
Call Tarot the Smasher. Make it urgent.
Yolanda waited. As she did, she lifted her head and looked at the skyscraper just a few hundred feet away. If anyone was looking out of those windows, all they would see was just another crawler. They wouldn't give it a second glance, wouldn't notice the damage, wouldn't notice that there were two sentients crammed into the cockpit. Tarot's holographic head appeared above the dashboard.
Yolanda Davenport, I am surprised to hear from you.
I need help, fast. We were kidnapped and attacked. We got away, but Wycor is hurt bad.
Tarot's eye turned to look at the worker.
You are correct, Yolanda. Wycor the Aware's antennae indicate he is dying.
Dying?
You need to get him to a hospital immediately.
Wycor thinks Volani has all of the city hospitals in her pocket. We'd be walking back into what we just escaped.
So you want to know if I know where you can get some safe medical attention?
Yes!
Okay. Go see Dr. Izzy Kurala. She is the former team doctor from when I played for the Orbiting Death. I will send you the address. Tell her I sent you.
A map popped up next to Tarot's head. Yolanda reached out, turning the map as she oriented herself by recognizing the skyscrapers around her.
This map says we are about 20 minutes away.
Then perhaps you should proceed at the maximum acceleration. From what I can see, Wycor has perhaps 25 minutes to live.
Yolanda quickly studied the directions. To their right, a crystal arch grew off a skyscraper and merged with the cavern wall. She could take that to the nearest building, around that building to an arch on the far side, then that arch to another building. As long as the crawler didn't tumble off an arch or the sheer face of a building, she could make it.
Thanks, Tarot. I owe you.
Who's keeping track?
Yolanda worked the joystick, angling toward that huge arch that ran between the wall and the skyscraper.
Wow, Tarot. I wouldn't have expected you to be so gracious.
No, I mean who is serving in the role of accountant? Am I tracking the favors or are you?
You are. You're up one right now.
Then I am owed. That's what I prefer. I look forward to speaking with you again, Yolanda.
Tarot's head winked out, ending the call. Yolanda concentrated on driving the crawler. Metal legs reached out and grabbed and pulled back, moving them forward. Yolanda could only make it go so fast, and wondered if it would be fast enough. Yolanda stumbled down an 86th floor hallway, peering at each door and looking for the right address. She carried an unconscious black and gray striped Quith worker on her shoulder. Her good shoulder, that was. The bad one hurt so much it was bringing tears to her eyes. Her lungs burned and her legs begged her to stop, but there wasn't time. Even at this late hour, she saw sentience in the hallway. It was a residential building, or at least this floor was, and sentience seemed to come and go at all times. The residents barely noticed her, as if seeing a passed-out worker was almost as common as seeing a crawler. At least no one recognized her, which wasn't surprising, considering her bloody clothes, wild hair, and what had to be the look of sheer panic on her blue face. She found the right apartment and kicked at the door. The door opened, and inside floated a white hurrah.
Tarot sent me.
Yolanda stumbled into the apartment and wildly looked around. She had never been in a hurrah's home before, and she took a moment to get situated. While other gravity-laden sentients all had furniture on the floor, the hurrah had various amenities bolted to the walls and ceilings. She saw a white cot on the floor with racks of medical equipment around it. Yolanda dumped Y-Core on the cot, then leaned against a rack trying to catch her breath. The hurrah floated to the wall, where a flat black metal box with straps hung from a hook. The hurrah slid her wings through the straps, then used her mouth flaps to click the harness tight.
Do come in.
Yolanda didn't have time for the attitude. She pointed at Y-Core.
He needs help. I can pay whatever you ask.
The GFL had more money than Galaxy Sports Magazine, and if she had to, Yolanda would bankrupt both companies to save Y-Core's life. He had come after her when he could have just fled. She was not going to let him die.
I suppose I have no choice. I do not wish to have a dead worker in my apartment.
The hurrah drifted down to Y-Core's prone body. His eye was closed. Yolanda realized how much she had come to watch for his eye color to reveal his emotional state. She suddenly felt very alone. The hurrah's white mouth flaps examined Y-Core, touching him here and there, then expertly flipping him over.
Doctor, are you?
The hurrah raised a mouth flap, silencing her. She probed at Y-Core for a moment more, then drifted to a cabinet on the wall. She pushed her tentacles around the inside, then came out with two bottles and a small club.
What's that for?
Pressure points.
The hurrah floated back to Y-Core. She dipped some of the first bottle in his mouth, then dipped the second on his body and began rubbing the oil into his sparse fur. Then she hovered above him and began beating him with the club. Yolanda started forward, her hand raised high to snatch the club away from the hurrah, but the elderly female raised the tentacle again. One more smart whack of Y-Core's back, and the quith gasped and flailed his pedipalps around, his eyes swirling a bright pink. Yolanda sagged against the wall, relieved. She slipped down to the floor, her head spinning with adrenaline and pain. The old hurrah drifted over to her in concern. Yolanda stared up at the floating creature. She could finally take a good look. The hurrah's skin was dry, a little scaly, and shrunk so tight to the body, it showed dips beneath the ribs that surrounded its air bladder and internal organs. Yolanda had never seen hurrah this old before.
Thank you.
Don't thank me, just pay me. You look like you need medical attention, too.
The hurrah again floated over to the cabinet, her wings undulating in graceful waves. Yolanda noticed the backpack had the logo of the Orbiting Death.
I'll be fine.
The hurrah returned, her mouth flap holding a metal vial.
Take this for pain.
The doctor put the vial to Yolanda's lips. Yolanda took one sip of the sickening sweet liquid and passed out immediately.